We are in the middle of a series this summer on life-changing questions from the gospel, and we're going to be working this morning out of Mark chapter 5. So I would invite you to take your Bible or our Bible or your cell phone, whatever it is you read scripture on, and be making your way to Mark chapter 5. We're going to kind of unpack it and then make a couple of applications from it. And then it'll be yours to take and do something with it. Mark chapter 5 is one story in a section of stories in Mark's gospel that really kind of go back to back to back to back. There's four stories told here, beginning right before the one we're going to look at today is at the end of chapter 4, a story about Jesus and the disciples are crossing the sea, and a storm blows up and begins to threaten the boat and scares the disciples to death. They think they're going to die. And then there's our story that we're going to look at today of where Jesus encounters a man who is possessed, a man who is under the influence of evil spirits. And then there's a story of a woman who's had a bleeding disorder of some sorts for over a decade or more, and Jesus is going to heal her. And then there's a story of a young girl who grew ill and died, and Jesus is going to raise her from the dead. Back to back to back to back. Four stories in a row where Mark really seems to be emphasizing for his readers the authority and the transforming power of Jesus. And we're going to look at the second of those four stories, those back-to-back-to-back-to-back stories. And it follows on the heels of the drowning, nearly, of the disciples the night before. The next morning, those who had been traveling with Jesus dock or come ashore, and Jesus and some of his disciples begin to walk through the countryside, and this story that Mark tells us about here in chapter 5 begins to unfold. And Mark tells us they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure, some of yours might read unclean, some of yours might even read demon-possessed, I'm not sure how all it's translated there, came from the tombs to meet him. And Mark gives a very detailed explanation of this guy. He's dirty. He's unclothed. He's covered with sores and scabs from head to toe where he has cut himself with sharp rocks. We get the impression that this man has been abandoned by his community, by his people, his family. He lives now alone in isolation in what amounts to the local cemetery, which, by the way, you might not know this, but in the law of Moses, when you come in contact with a dead body, what did that make you? Made you unclean. So here's a guy who lives in among the tombs, among the dead is where he lives. And so this is a man who is ceremonially unclean because of where he lives. Not just dirty and needing a bath, but he has been made unclean ceremonially because he lives among the dead. He lives in the tombs, what amounts to the local cemetery. That's not a big deal to us, but that would have been a big deal to people back in the ancient days. So this man, by all accounts, what Mark, I think, is trying to get us to see with this very detailed description is this guy's a pitiful, pitiful mess. It's just sad what has happened. This is somebody. At one time, this was somebody's boy with hopes and aspirations and dreams, maybe even a family back home. maybe even a wife, children. This is someone. Now, we don't know his name, but he had a name. He had a life prior to whatever happened. And so Mark paints this very detailed picture for us of this sad, pathetic, pitiful, isolated man and his existence. And so as Jesus gets off the boat and begins to walk through the countryside, this is who he meets. And Mark points out for us that this man is so strong that he can no longer be bound, even by ropes or chains. And so his life has just kind of spiraled out of control. Verse 6. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." And then Mark adds this little commentary, verse 8, for Jesus apparently had already said to him, to the demon in the man, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." And so get this picture, get the chronology, get this picture in your mind. Jesus has locked eyes with this guy already, and has called the evil influence, the demonic powers in this man's life already to come out of him, prompting them, I think, the man to run over to Jesus, fall down in front of Jesus, shout out to Jesus, "What do you want with us? What do you want with me, Son of the Most High God? Don't torture me." And then Jesus asks a question, verse 9. "What is your name? What is your name?" Now, it's a bit of a strange question, isn't it? We're not really even 100% sure who Jesus is directing his question to, right? Is he asking the man his name? Or is he asking the evil spirit within the man his name? Either one takes you to interesting places. The man obviously had a name. It might not have been spoken by anyone in a long time, but he had a name. It's a little interesting to think about an evil spirit having a name. I'm not an authority in demonology, and I doubt many of you are either. But a lot of scholars think Jesus is actually talking to the evil spirit here and asking him his name, because he is the one who actually answers, or it is the one who actually answers the question, "What is your name?" The answer given to that question is, "My name is Legion, for we are many." It seems like maybe Jesus is carrying on the conversation with the evil spirit here. But here's something, don't miss this. Don't get lost in all of this. What's important about all of this is Jesus is interacting with this guy to begin with. Because we've already established a moment ago, this guy is ceremonially unclean. Which means most rabbis in Jesus' day would have had nothing to do with this guy, because coming in contact with this man made you unclean, and there was a whole long, drawn-out protocol as what had to be done when you were rendered unclean. It wasn't something, you didn't just go wash your hands. It was a rather drawn-out ordeal for you to be washed and made ceremonially clean again. But Jesus just throws all that out the window. I mean, he's walked right up to this guy. He's engaging this man and the spirit within the man. Jesus, in other words, is getting dirty. He's getting his hands dirty here by coming in contact with this guy. And what that shows me is the heart and the compassion of Jesus. When many others, like Jesus, a teacher, a rabbi, would have run in the other direction of this guy, Jesus walks right up to this guy and begins to engage him and interact with him. And so Jesus says, "What's your name?" And the spirit within the man replies, "Legion, for we are many." Now, in the ancient days, a legion of Roman soldiers, anybody know how many soldiers that would have been? 600? I've actually read it could have been up to 6,000. Maybe a little bit of discrepancy there on how many. The bottom line is it's a lot of people, isn't it? A legion was a pretty big group of people. Now, does that mean there were that many spirits in this guy? I don't know. If so, this guy was kind of like the Hulk, right? Maybe that's why nobody could bind him. Nobody could chain him down. Nobody could tie him down because he had the strength of several hundred or several thousand men within him. But whatever that means, the implication is, the bottom line is, this guy's under the influence of a pretty strong, a pretty powerful demonic influence. We are many. This guy is bound, and it has rendered his life a horrible, horrible mess. After that, the spirits within this man begin to interact with Jesus, and they're fearful that Jesus is going to send them out of the area, and they beg him not to do that. And so they ask, "Hey, there's a herd of swine over here. Let us go into the pigs." Verse 12. "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." Now, this was an area predominantly Gentile. It was mixed. So it's not unexpected to find a herd. This would not have been something you would have found in Israel proper, but they're kind of outside of that territory a little bit. So you've got a Gentile influence here. So it's not all that uncommon to find some pigs, some swine. Here's a pretty big herd. "Hey, let us go into the pigs." Verse 13, Jesus gave them permission. And the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out like we all do. How many of you got out and drove around Friday night after the storm went through town? Anybody? Wes is willing to confess. Lester, all right. I got out. Yeah, we were actually in it. We were going to Nathan's house and drove right through that wind. Pretty cool. Pretty cool now. It was pretty hairy and scary there for a few minutes. No, not joking with you. Because we were going through the part of Graves County where it was the strongest. Sedalia, Lebanon, and then Pryorsburg. And so we went right through that dude, and there were trees down everywhere, all over the place. That's what you do, right, when something unusual happens. You get out, you get in your car, you drive, you go see. Well, that's, hey, they're no different than us. All the pigs drowned, huh? Honey, get the car. We got to go see this, right? So they all went to see what happened. Verse 15. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons, sitting there dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Now, I think that's an important part of the story. They were afraid. Why were they afraid? Some people think that there might have been an economic fear going on here. A loss of 2,000 swine could impact the local community quite a bit economically, right? And so some think that maybe these folks are fearful that if this guy stays around any longer, what's going to happen next? And so they want Jesus to leave. They want Jesus to leave their area. And it might be because they don't want their wallets to be impacted any further. You've probably never heard the name of Calvin Stowe, but you've probably heard the name of his wife, Harriet Beecher Stowe. We got some literary folks in here. She wrote the anti-slavery book that many of us read in school, right? Uncle Tom's Cabin. Well, her husband, Calvin, was a professor of biblical studies. They took a tour in England not long after her book was released, and Calvin was given an opportunity to speak to a gathering of people on anti-slavery day in England. England had already banned slavery, and were apparently quite proud of that. Calvin Stowe got up and in his sermon called all of those who were gathered that day celebrating anti-slavery day, he called them all hypocrites. Because 80% of the cotton picked by slaves in the southern states of America was bought by English people. And so he said, slavery will die in America too if England will boycott its cotton. And he went on to ask, are you willing to sacrifice one penny of your profits to do away with the end of slavery? They booed him off the stage. They didn't want that economic hardship. And so I wonder if something like that might not be going on here in this story. Why are they afraid of Jesus? When other people see miracles of Jesus, they say, hey, he did that for him. Maybe he can do that for me. Right? But no, they want him to get out of town. They want him to leave. And so maybe they don't like what Jesus has done for some reason. And maybe it has something to do with the economics of the situation. So even though Jesus has restored a man that some of them knew, has given him back his life, and I love the way Mark expresses it, dressed and in his right mind. This guy's better. He's well. He's back. Praise God, he's back, right? No. Instead, they want Jesus to leave. Now, quickly, as we end this story, Jesus and his disciples are okay. They're preparing to leave. The man who had been delivered by Jesus begs to go with Jesus. Let me go with you. Verse 18. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. But surprisingly, verse 19, Jesus did not let him. It's the only request in this story that Jesus denies. Right? The demons request, let us go into the pigs. And Jesus says, okay. Have at it. The townspeople say, Jesus, we want you to leave and get out of Dodge. Okay, we'll go. This guy who's been healed by Jesus comes to Jesus and begs him, Jesus, let me go with you. Let me go with you and the other disciples. I want to go with you. And Jesus says, no. Didn't see that one coming. But apparently it's not because Jesus doesn't like the guy. And it's not because Jesus doesn't want him to follow him. He does. It's just he has something else that he wants this guy to do. Well, what is that? Verse 19. Jesus did not let him, but said, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. So this nameless guy whose life is radically changed by Jesus is sent back by Jesus to his community, to his people, to his home with the simple instructions, go home and tell your story, which the man faithfully did. Told his story to all who would listen to him, and the people were amazed. All right, now, again, remember, this story is one of four, back to back to back, where the main point, the primary point, seems to be to show the readers of Mark's gospel the power, the transforming power, and the authority of Jesus. Jesus speaks, and the wind dies down, and the sea grows calm. Jesus speaks, and a woman suffering from a bleeding disorder is healed and given her life back. Jesus speaks, and a child is raised from the dead and given a new life. Jesus speaks, and demons flee, giving a wrecked man, a broken man, new hope and a new life. The readers of Mark's gospel, he wants them to know Jesus has authority. King Jesus has power to change the stories of people. That's what Mark, I think, is emphasizing here. Jesus has the authority and the power to change things. And so an extension of this point is this. When people come in contact with the authority and the transforming power of Jesus, their stories often change in good ways. And so the disciples who thought they were going to die have a story about how Jesus calmed the wind and the waves. Do you think they ever told that story again to anybody in their lives? Do you think they ever said to someone, man, I have got a great story for you. We were in a boat, and we thought we were going to die. And you won't believe it, but when the storm was at its worst, Jesus was asleep in the middle of the boat. We went down there and shook him and woke him up. And I'll never forget it. He walked out on the deck of the boat and he raised up his hands and he said, peace, be still. And immediately the wind stopped and the sea got like glass. You think they ever told that story again? You think their kids ever heard that story, if any of them ever had kids? What about that woman who had a bleeding disorder? For how long was it? 12 years. It wrecks me if I have a headache for an hour. This woman was sick for 12 years. And she walked up and she touched the hem of Jesus' garment. And you think she ever told that story? You won't believe what happened when I walked up behind him and I touched his garment. Reckon she ever told that story to anybody again? What do you think that mom and dad did? Man, I got an amazing story for you. Our daughter was dead. We were getting ready to bury her. But when Jesus walked out of that room, she was alive. Think they ever told? Even though Jesus asked them, hey, don't tell anybody what I've done. I bet they disobeyed him. Wouldn't surprise me that they told somebody, Jesus brought our daughter back from the dead. And what about this guy? Did he tell anybody what Jesus had done? Yeah. He went back and faithfully told anybody who would listen. Let me tell you a story. Man, I was gone. I was as broke and as messed up and as destroyed as anybody has ever been. And Jesus set me free. He went back and told that story to whoever would listen. And those who heard him tell that story were amazed. So, while the primary point I think Mark is making here is that Jesus has the authority and the power to transform people, the outgrowth of that point is this. When people interact with and experience the transforming power and authority of Jesus, they have a story to tell. And so here's what we're doing. We're looking at life-changing stories from the Gospels for the purpose of trying to find out what do these stories tell us about what it means to follow King Jesus and trust and follow him. And so here's something that this story, I think, teaches us, and that is this. Those who have had an experience with the authority of King Jesus and his transforming power have a story to tell. And folks, good stories are meant to be shared. Good stories are meant to be shared. In fact, Peter says as much. I think I've got this. Yeah. Peter, the mentor of Mark, wrote this in one of his epistles. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may, what? Declare. This has happened to you, and now you are to declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Those who've had an experience with the authority and the transforming power of Jesus are called to be a declarative people. Good stories are meant to be shared. Well, yeah, but I don't have a very good story. But it's really not about how good your story is. But I don't have a powerful story like this guy did. Well, that's really beside the point. The point is you have a story. Whatever your story is, it's your story. Whatever Jesus has done or continues to do in your life that helps to shape you and remake you in his image, that's your story. And that story is worth telling. That story, there are others who likely need to hear that story, who might be opened to the authority and power of Jesus by hearing about how he is reshaping and changing you through your story. So, all of this then to say this. I need to hustle. I've got two quick points, two things I want to do here before we get out of here. Number one, know your story. This passage challenges us to know our story. Disciples of King Jesus need to know their story. All of us who are married have a story of how we met our spouse. Right? And we can probably tell that story. I have a story about how I met Dana. We have a story about how we met. You have a story about how you met your spouse, and you've probably shared that story with people. We have stories in our lives that we share. As a faithful disciple of Jesus, King Jesus, disciples need to know their story. Earlier this spring, those of us who gather here on Wednesday nights, some of us had a class called Know Your Story. Some of you participated in that class. We had 5 members of our family share their story of how their story and God's story had intersected and how God had changed their story for the better. Powerful, powerful testimonies of how Jesus has changed the trajectory and the stories of some of the members of our family here. Thank you to those of you who shared your stories and encourage the rest of us by those stories of seeing God at work in your life. And one of the things we encouraged others who were attending that class to do was to know your story. Know your story. What is it that Jesus is doing in your life? How did you meet Jesus? What did that look like? What's your story? How has he continued to shape and remake you into his likeness and his image? We need to know that story. Because there just may be an opportunity down the road where if I can share that story with someone, it might open them to the power and the authority of Jesus in their life. And so faithful disciples of King Jesus need to know their story. What's your story? Do you know it? Could you share with someone, if given the opportunity, what Jesus is doing to change you, to reshape you and remake you into His image? What has He done in your life? Know your story. And number two, disciples of King Jesus need to be ready to put in a good word for their King. Right? When that opportunity presents itself, we want to be faithful like the man in this story, not fearful like the townspeople in the story. They were afraid to trust Jesus. We're not sure where this guy's going to lead us. We're not sure what he's going to do. The man was faithful and went and looked for opportunities to share his story. And so, here it is. Here's the end. Knowing our story and being open to the opportunities King Jesus gives us to faithfully share our stories with others is what it means to trust and follow King Jesus. We're using that phraseology a lot around here. Help us learn how to trust and follow King Jesus. How that plays out in some instances is I know my story, and when I'm given an opportunity, I can put in a good word for Jesus, my King. Bless your neighbor. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make His face to shine upon you and give you peace. Mm-hmm.